The EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me our EWTN Family Prayer. Today we pray for peace. Lord Jesus, Son of God and Son of Mary, we praise and thank you. You have taught us that peace is your gift to us, and have forbidden us to be troubled or afraid. Free us from anxiety, Lord. Dispel fear from our hearts, and give us a deep trust in your abiding presence and in your promises. Manifest your providential care for us by meeting our needs this day, and let us tangibly experience your love. Jesus, we trust in your promises. Amen.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
That I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. She's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to have you with me on The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. Normally, I would say email, but I have evolved. I've grown. I like to think of myself as much more linguistically sensitive than I used to be. Email. It's rather patriarchal. It's rather limiting, cutting out 50% of the population, actually about 52% now, because we guys live riskier lifestyles and we die earlier. But e-person is more umbrella-like. It's a big tent piece of language. It is what it says. I take a look at your missives. No, I can't even say that. That's kind of narrow. Missives, probably should say Ms-ives, and see what comes in. Come from the TV show, they come from the radio show, and then I will read them and stop periodically after a sentence or two because I like to read between the lines and speculate as though someone's talking to me. So we shall get to that, but for the moment, the monologue. I will sometimes tease my clients. What would your mother have done had you talked to her the way your daughter is talking to you? I didn't talk to my mother that way. Why not? You were a teenage girl once. Teenage girls are so automatically snotty and surly. Why weren't you? Well, I may have felt like it, but I didn't do it very often. Why not? I knew. You knew what? Something would happen. What? I don't know. Why don't you know? It never happened. Why didn't it happen? I never did it. Why didn't you do it? Something would have happened. What? I don't know. Who's on first? I don't know. Third base! It's an Abbott and Costello routine, but it speaks of something. I know many of you listening to me right now either look at your grandkids and perhaps the way they let their emotions and verbal barrage loose on their parents, or you're listening to me now and you have your own kids who do this. And you think to yourself, I didn't do that. Now, I'm sure some of you did, and your memory's a little fuzzy about it. But I do believe it was less common, much less common. Now, why was that? Your parents didn't read a whole bunch of parenting books. They weren't psychologically enlightened like we now are. They didn't have all the developmental psychology books and education. Why was this? Why were you less likely to challenge your parents' authority or to mistreat a parent? And I believe that's a safe statement to make across generations. See, I was conflating two. I wanted to say that's a safe generalization to make across generations. Why? I call it the perception of authority. Somehow, something in you perceived that your parents had authority, and that if necessary, they were willing to act upon that authority. Which meant they didn't have to do it very often, because you perceived it. If a child does not really perceive that a parent has confident, calm authority, willing to act, they'll push harder. They'll test the boundaries. They'll mistreat. Why? Because it's not so clear. My wife and I reserve some of our strongest discipline for disrespect. We tried hard to respect the kids. Not going to yell at them. Not going to put them down with our words. And we expected. And it wasn't just expectations. It was enforcement. The two E's. Expect and enforce. That if you were to do something like this, the consequences would be pretty stringent. Loss of lots of privileges, writing essays, extra chores. And the kids knew this, and they learned it very, very early. And I think there's a parallel with you. You learned it very, very early. That if you were to step over that respect line and get disrespectful, something would happen. And you never really tested it to see what exactly it was. Maybe you learned it a few times and that was enough. And you didn't go there anymore. It wasn't because your parents were necessarily so educated. They weren't psychologically slick. My dad dropped out of high school during World War II. He wasn't what the experts would call psychologically enlightened. But he had an authority to him. When he spoke, I knew he meant it. I knew he was going to enforce it. I didn't push it. When you're clear what's going to happen, if you deliberately defy, and that's really what I'm talking about. I mean, all kids misbehave, and they misbehave out of impulse and immaturity and foolishness and bad judgment, opportunism. Yeah, they do. That's just kidhood. But I'm talking defiance, in-your-face resistance. It's a lot more common now than I think it was two generations ago. Definitely two generations ago. Maybe not a lot more common than one generation ago, but I still think it is. I talked to teachers who've been teaching for 40 years, and they're shocked. They said the difference in the kids, even at the early elementary level, who are just simply flat-out willing to challenge the authority of an adult, has skyrocketed in its frequency. So given that, the perception of authority means you discipline less. It's true. If you don't have authority, you're always chasing it. You're always trying to assert it. You're using words, you're using volume, you're using emotions, you're arguing, you're reasoning, you're renegotiating, you're bribing, you're doing everything you can to get cooperation. If you have legitimate authority, you don't discipline anywhere near as much because you don't have to. You've established the expectation from the child. Remember the look? The look is dead now. Parent will look at a child and risk getting a look back that says, "What are you looking at?" The look meant, here is a warning. I am prepared to act if you ignore this look. It was kind of like classical conditioning. Remember Pavlov's dogs? Does his name ring a bell? Pavlov found that dogs salivated to the sight of food, so he did a little experiment. He rang a bell just before presenting the food. After multiple bell food pairings, pretty soon just the bell elicited salivation. I think the look is kind of a classical conditioning. If the look follows action when it's ignored, then pretty soon it's paired with authority. And the look then becomes the discipline, which you don't have to do because you've given a warning. Please stop that behavior. Leave your sister alone. Watch your tone. It's getting close. There's the look. You can use a look all over the place. Parents used to use the look all over. But if there is no authority, the look is meaningless. Veterinarians will tell you that if you are going to control a big dog, you have to have some authoritative demeanor about you. Our Rottweiler, when she comes in to eat, and she looks at me, and she's ecstatic to get that food, but if I stare back at her and I just look at her, she looks at me, and she won't budge until I say okay. Now, she has no idea that she'd be a real threat to me if she decided to unload. Big girl. But somehow in her doggy mind, that look of mine, that stare down, and sometimes she'll turn away. She don't want to keep staring. That the big dog, her master, is asserting his authority. She learned that as a puppy. The perception of authority. If your children perceive you have it, and not in a dictatorial, jackbooted, kick the door down on back kids and I'm ticked. No. Authority is ultimately kind, because it gets rid of all the ugliness that can happen when you don't have authority. You get loud, you get nasty. You go to confession and you say, "Bless me, Father, I'm just such a bad person. I don't talk to anybody the way I talk to my kids." If you have authority, you don't use it very often. That's the great thing about it. And things are a lot more peaceable when we come back to your e-persons.
Advent is here, and Ave Maria Radio wants to walk beside you every day as we move towards the birth of Jesus. When you visit AveMariaRadio.net, you can join our Advent mission and receive short, powerful, and engaging daily videos that help you enter the mystery of the Incarnation with new clarity and devotion. Go to the slider at AveMariaRadio.net, sign up, and take your place in this joyful journey to the manger.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
As the new year approaches, it's the perfect moment to check off a big resolution early and wrap your family in the gift of security. Planning ahead shows your love in a big way, ensuring your wishes shine through no matter what life brings. At MyCatholicWill.com/AVE, you can create your will at no cost from the privacy of your home. The process is straightforward. Go to MyCatholicWill.com/AVE. And prioritize your family's peace of mind.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The blood of Jesus shed on the cross healed all our wounds. A lot of people say, "Well, I can do what I want. I can commit any sin. Jesus saved me." You can't be presumptuous. All holy God cannot allow you to sin or give you the right to sin by dying for you. That doesn't make any sense.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Thank you for joining me here. The doctor's in. This is E-Person Monday. Let's get to it. Dear Dr. Ray, this is kind of a long story, so here goes. It's a long story because, as I recall reading this, there were two separate scenario issues involved. The one I think I can comment on accurately. The other one, I'm not so sure. I need a whole lot more info. Our family was returning home from evening mass. My husband, myself, my two stepsons. We stopped at the store to get groceries, during which I lightheartedly told my husband how my biological son said he would only eat, and then she mentioned something, I don't know what it is, for a dessert because he doesn't like any others. Whereupon, my husband gave me a somewhat disgusted look and told me he didn't think that's right. There has always been complications with our blended family with children. All three boys are 18. Now, see, that's the key line. Anyhow, I felt upset by his reaction. I can have pouty moments, Dr. A, and the need to be alone. All right, let me stop there. One of the very common reasons for second relationships with stepchildren for failing is the children. A common dynamic is that the biological parent, for many reasons, maybe shared custody, maybe fears that the kids won't come to see him or her on the weekends, guilt that the first relationship failed, all of that can enter in to change the discipline style. It can be lax, it can be loose, or in their mind it's fine, but in the step-parent's mind it is not. The step-parent is looking at what's going on and realizing that the kids are just getting too much freedom, too much lax response. I see that all the time. That is so, so common. My speculation is that's what happened when her husband reacted the way he did because she said, he'll only eat this for dessert. I could picture her husband thinking, then he doesn't eat dessert. He's interpreting that as, see, you just give him whatever he wants. And now he's 18 and he's obnoxious. I bet that's what's going on. All right. Now here comes the much more complex situation here. I felt upset, and I needed to be alone. Soon after we were leaving the store, I decided I would walk home. About a 50-minute walk in a safe end of town, neighborhood, in the bright evening light to blow off some steam. Okay, scenario, mom's upset. Mom basically said, I'm walking home. Now, I would bet that her husband interpreted that as a little bit of a hissy fit. He didn't interpret it as, well, she needs to calm herself down. She needs to settle because she realizes, yeah, I made a good point. No, she's mad. And that's, I think, it primed him to be really upset at what he saw was a stunt. When I was about 20 minutes away from home, a man drove by very slowly, leering at me. He drove away. I didn't think much of it, except that he was perhaps weird, and I just kept walking. A few moments later, I heard his car coming up behind me. as I had recalled a loud rattling sound it made the first time he went by. My heart was now pounding because I knew he was following me. He turned the corner in front of me and stopped in the middle of the road. I didn't know what to do. I had nowhere to hide, so I kept walking. Pulled out my phone to call my husband. He didn't answer. And I would wonder if he was still just kind of upset at the fact that she, more or less, once again, yielded to her son's wishes, as he saw she always does. And that was just another one, and it represented her parenting style with him. That's why I think he got so upset over just the idea that the kid only eats one kind of dessert. But then, when she took off, more or less saying, I'm upset at you because you questioned not only me but my son. And he thought, this is standard. She didn't look at me and say, yeah, I agree, you're right. No, she got mad and she left. Okay, so he was already primed. At this moment, I saw that the man's back window was completely broken out, adding to the scariness of the situation. My son, she called her son, immediately left to pick me up and reach me safely. I called my husband moments before I got in my son's car to inform him of what was happening or what had happened. On our way home, we crossed paths with my husband, and he stopped us to ask where the guy went. But we didn't answer, because we were trying to get home quickly, and also didn't really hear what he was saying, and I thought he was just checking to make sure I was safe. Okay, so a misunderstanding there, right? The husband is feeling very protective of his wife. He wants to find this dude somehow, some way. I don't know what he was going to do. Wife didn't give him any kind of answer, and he thought, okay, well, if it's not that important to you, then that's what I think happened. My husband was gone for a while after my son and I got home, as he was looking for the man. When he returned, instead of comforting me and asking me if I was okay, he began to criticize the way my son and I did not tell him which way the guy went and how we did not inform him about all the details. Okay. Once again, you see, I think husband was interpreting this as she's an ally with her son. Her son was there to, quote unquote, see her to safety. And when the husband said, I want to do what I can to protect you, he didn't hear either one of them say anything. It was as though they were blocking him. I think that's how he interpreted it. That, okay, so your son, your ally, which should be me, but is not, came to get you, and you didn't think enough to even give me any details about the car, what this guy did, nothing. So I'm sure he interpreted it as, you are simply, once again, allying yourself with your son. This was difficult for me to hear, as I was shaken up by the event. I could barely think of what to do, let alone explain everything at that moment. When I brought up later how his reaction made me feel, the conversation again, here it is, I knew it, turned to how my son has problems. And how maybe God was telling me to walk away like that again. No, not to walk away like that again when I walked home from the store. There it is. This whole event was, once again, you are allowing the son, which he now sees as a behavior problem, and whatever, immature, whatever it is about him, that he believes she has done a lot of this in her parenting. This is a classic example. She got upset, she walked away, and she shouldn't have, and you saw what happened. I feel very bewildered by my husband's reaction to the whole situation. I don't. I it's very understandable. I'm not saying it's good. It seems unusual for him, like there is less love or cherishing or protection of me. We've been married 8 years, and I've had a few rough patches, mostly surrounding the kids. This is, however, the most unsupportive I have ever felt. I don't know what to do. Well, I think it's understandable. Now, I'm not saying it's good and right. I'm saying it's understandable. He interpreted this as just another situation where you allied with your son over him. You didn't think enough at the time to give him details or thank him or anything like that. He was already stinging from the fact that you got out of the car and walked home. He saw that as a pouting hissy fit. So maybe, you said you apologize, so maybe you can tell him, I was wrong to do that, and maybe you might want to say, for your marriage's sake, what kinds of things do you see me as needing to do different with these boys?
Father Benedict Rochelle.
I'm going to tell you about the most abused woman I ever met in my life. You know her name as Roe, as in Roe versus Wade. I talked to Roe. This woman is a great penitent. This woman is a humble person who was deeply hurt. She was kneeling in the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception, the National Shrine in Washington, when I met her. And I thought, what reverence. I didn't know who this woman was, but she was praying with reverence, with great fervor. And I asked a priest friend of mine, who is that? And he says, oh, that's Roe. God is not mocked. This woman was abused by those who propagate the killing of children.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
How does man fulfill his vocation? Through life in the Holy Spirit, the Catechism tells us. This life is made up of divine charity and human solidarity and is offered as salvation. Man's great dignity is rooted in his creation in the image and likeness of God. It is fulfilled in his vocation to divine beatitude. It is by our own actions, doing good and avoiding evil, freely chosen acts, that man conforms to the good promised by God. Human beings make their own contribution to their own interior growth, the Catechism tells us. With the help of grace, man can avoid sin and grow in virtue. It is Christ who reveals the mystery of the Father and his love for man, thus making man fully manifest to himself and bringing to light his exalted vocation. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
This is Cy Kellett. Join me for Catholic Answers Live. It's 2 hours dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Designed for Catholics and non-Catholics alike, it's your opportunity to hear from and talk with some of the leading apologists and theologians in the church today. You've got questions? We've got Catholic answers. Catholic Answers Live, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Nice to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program Doctor is in, co-production EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, and Ave Maria Radio Communications. Andrew Kruchek is my producer man there in Ann Arbor. And the show is The Doctor is In, but the variant is E-Person Monday, where I look at this stack of E-Persons and see which ones we're going to try to tackle, to use manly language, today. My father was diagnosed with dementia in the summer of 2016. He is still very active and able to live at home at this time. However, my mother has become verbally and emotionally abusive to my father, So much so that we are no longer comfortable leaving him alone with her. Typically, when a spouse does this, some of it is mixed in with their frustration. Why are you like this? Why are you doing this? I've told you this 9 times. You keep asking me. And some of it is fear. The person that they've lived with all these years, who was their partner and companion and perhaps very competent, is now becoming more childlike. And they're frustrated, they're hurt, and they're angry. And sometimes that manifests itself in mistreatment. Now, I don't know if that's the case here, but it's a very common scenario. My mother has been... Okay, hold on, I skipped a line. We fear that my father will someday physically retaliate. Well, if in fact his governor, his inhibition, his self-control is slipping, and she's treating him meanly, that's a possibility. He has also expressed this fear himself. In other words, I'm not sure I'm not going to do something in return, which means he's probably not completely confused. If he has enough insight to say, the way she treats me, one of these times I'm going to react. My mother has been verbally abusive in the past. All right. Is this her style? Or does it come and go with stress or frustrations or bad times in the marriage? If this is her style, indicating perhaps a low frustration tolerance, inability to roll with some of the day-to-day difficulties of marriage, and now having a spouse that is moving into dementia, it would just push her to her very limit. I took her to see a therapist a few years ago. Now, I'm going to assume that she wanted to go see that therapist. I don't know how much persuasion you had to do. The therapist diagnosed her as narcissistic. Okay, I'm certainly not going to quibble with a therapist's diagnosis. But the diagnosis of narcissism is a very serious personality disorder. And for someone to be a narcissist, this is their personality style across the board with pretty much everybody. They are enormously self-absorbed, unable to have much empathy for anyone, unable to see another person's perspective, expecting to be treated in a certain way but operating out of a double standard. And that's across the board. That is a personality ingrained trait, if you will. So if, in fact, her perception of your father's dementia is how it complicates her life and what she has to put up with and endure, but she gets along well at church and she has friends, and in fact, with her own adult children, she's nowhere near that unpleasant, then I'm not going to quibble with the therapist's diagnosis. But what I am going to say is that her narcissism is very focused. At this time, my siblings and I are not sure if a facility is the right place for my father, and it would be a financial burden for my parents that I'm not sure we could render. He'd be fine living at home. Now, when you say he'd be fine living at home, are you saying he's capable of living at home, or he would be content to live at home if my mother were capable of help with the caregiving? Yeah, I think what's going to happen is your choice may be forced sooner, because if she's not willing to go the extra mile in living, caring for, rolling with, tolerating, someone who is deteriorating in their dementia, then you may have to make this choice sooner than later. Under ideal circumstances, if she were more willing and capable of dealing with his dementia, and a lot of spouses are heroic in doing this. I mean, they keep that spouse home until the very, very last minute, physically, cognitively, and emotionally. But if your mom's not one of those, then rather than being angry at her, not going to do you any good to be angry at her, you will make this choice for your dad sooner. And at some point, don't know when that would be, depending upon the progression of the dementia, at some point he will not even be all that aware that he will be being placed in a separate setting. For the meantime, maybe you can bring in some help. You can rotate the siblings. You can pay for some in-home care for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time so that your mom can get away. In some respects, maybe your dad can get away from her. Those are your options right now. But the reality is, as you describe it, that your mom is not real willing to go the extra mile, and she's getting frustrated fast with his deterioration. And that will bring about you having to make a decision sooner than you otherwise might have had to do if she were more willing to persevere in this. This is tough stuff. This is tough stuff when you get to this point where you have that kind of neurological deterioration, and so much of it comes down to what kind of support system is available.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heartsick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy. You can't see God in that cross. You can't see God in that sin. Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I tell oftentimes an experience that I had at Divine Child when I was a young priest, 1 year ordained. First time I ever really saw the power of the Blessed Sacrament. And we simply exposed the Blessed Sacrament at the end of Mass one night. I encouraged people. I said, you know what, we've been in the habit of praying over people after Mass. I said, we're not going to do that this week. I'm just going to invite people to come on up and pray if they want to pray. And I put the Blessed Sacrament on the altar. I kneel down. As I kneel down, the church is in the sanctuary, the whole church. And as I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the people there, and I'm looking at Jesus under the appearance of bread there, I saw the Lord standing on the altar. And he's just standing there looking out at all the people. And then at a certain point, he turned towards me, and he just bowed. And he says, don't you see how easy this is? You don't have to do anything. You just have to put me out. You put me out, and I will work.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
The opinions, ideas, notions, and intellectual nuggets expressed on The Doctor Is In are not necessarily those of the management staff, call screeners, board operators, mother-in-laws, second cousins once removed, and parole officers of Ave Maria Radio. And any resemblance or close relationship thereof is purely coincidental and is not a reflection or indication that any of the aforementioned individuals are listening to the program or even like it.
You know, they talk about evolution. don't know. I think there's some places where evolution really falls short. How come mothers have only two hands, huh? And they don't have that third eye in the back of their head? If evolution really would be survival of the fittest, natural selection, I would think that would be. This is Dr. A here, the program The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. Let's get to it some more. Our six children came home from public school and university. I think this is someone from Canada, because that's what they call college in Canada, university, when COVID hit. My husband and I decided to keep the three youngest children at home for the school year. Our oldest went back to university in the fall. Our two middle oldest went back to their public school in January. What do I do if the kids want to all go back to public school? Well, I guess my response to that is, I'm not sure what you mean. What do I do? Are you saying, how do I convince them? Or are you saying, do I have the right to say that we're going to homeschool our three youngest? You do have that decision as a parent. Now, if you're saying, well, they might not like it, well, you don't know how long they won't like it. After 6 months, they might love it, not having to get up at 7 in the morning and getting up at 8 and getting their work done by 11 and having the rest of the day free and not having to do homework at night. I mean, it's going to evolve. I'd like to even keep all the youngest four at home, and she capitalized all. Our oldest is graduating university next week. Next in line will be a senior in high school next school year. So what she's saying is, okay, we've got one graduating college, one graduating high school. All right? But she wants to homeschool the four younger ones. That's her decision. How do we fight that battle, which it has become? Well, I guess I'm going to say you don't have to fight the battle. And by that, I do not mean you send them to whatever school they wish. It's not a battle. It's a decision. If you think, as a parent, I think, I'm going to assume two things. One, you're older than your kids. And two, you're smarter than your kids. So if you think that it is to their benefit to be homeschooled, then you do so. I think they'll push on you a lot harder, and this is going back to my monologue of authority. Once they perceive that this is your decision and it is the way it will be for their benefit and your family's benefit, once they perceive that, they'll quit pushing as hard. Right now they're pushing because they see you wobbling. If you think it's best, in your parental judgment, if you think this is best, you don't worry about some kind of psychological scars by having them at home. They may not like it for a while, but I think they'll come to really like it. And furthermore, for example, if you say it'll be a battle because they won't do the work, well, we had a simple rule in our house that, again, we didn't have to enforce it very often because it was an understood rule. Schoolwork is completed before any privileges of any kind begin. It's that simple. And though they were very quick to get their schoolwork done, or at least at the level they were capable of, this is your decision. If you think it's a good one, you make it. You do not allow the resistance of a 9-year-old to say, I don't want this. Because they don't know ultimately what's best for them. You do. The number one reason a lot of parents who wish to homeschool don't is exactly what you're saying. Discipline. And there's a certain irony to that, is there not? Example. A teacher who may have 22 children doesn't have a fraction of the authority of a parent. But yet, the children perceive, at least the bulk of the children, perceive that teacher has the authority. You, on the other hand, do not have 22 children. You're going to have 4 at home. And you have authority that absolutely dwarfs a teacher's. She can't assign an essay for disrespect. She's not allowed. She can't make a child stand in a corner. She's not allowed. She has virtually no discipline leverage. But yet the kids are more likely to cooperate with her than with you. Why? Because they perceive that you're not sure in your authority. If you simply say, kids, this is what we're going to do, it's going to work out, there'll be a lot of benefits for you, here they are. If you don't like them, well, let's hope you adjust, because this is the direction we're heading in. This is what we're going to do. I did my 3%. My wife did the bulk of our homeschooling by far. The two older children went to school through second and first grade. Then we decided to homeschool. How did they react? There was a little resistance at first. But within several months, they liked it a lot. Because they were done by 11 o'clock with the same amount of work, if not more. They didn't have schoolwork to do at night. They didn't get home at 3:30. Have to get up at 6:30. That didn't happen. We had much more flexibility in our schedules. We could go places and do things. We used to go to Myrtle Beach in the off season when everything was so cheap and there weren't lines at the restaurants. They loved it. We'd go in October. They were in school. We couldn't do any of that. We had maximum flexibility in our family life. So I would suggest to you, you make this decision. Now, here comes more of it. As my daughter said yesterday, now I don't know which daughter this was. Maybe it's the one who went to college. Homeschooled kids are just not socialized. The big S word. And that's not true. If you look at the research, they're more socialized than their peer counterparts. And they certainly are more academically competent than their peer counterparts. I beg to differ, she says. But how do we put our foot down and keep it down? How do we keep strong when we are grossly outnumbered? You're not gross. Mom, you are not grossly outnumbered. You could have 10 kids. We had 10 kids. We were terribly outnumbered, just in numbers. But we were not outnumbered in parenthood and in our decisions. We had authority. They didn't have authority. Not a matter of being outnumbered, Mom. It's a matter of you confidently deciding what you wish to do for your kids' welfare as you see it. Socialized to what, as Bill Bennett would say? Socialized to what? Your kids are not going to grow up in a vacuum. They're going to have friends. They're going to go to church. They're going to go and there's all kinds of school, homeschool groups. There's activities they can go through the local schools like our kids did. There's so many options now. You're not sitting in a cabin somewhere out in the woods with no human beings within 5 miles. That's not going to happen. And I guess I would ask this question. How were children socialized before the advent of public education? They were socialized by their parents and the people around them, their aunts, their uncles, their grandparents. And even though family ties are not that cohesive anymore, there's still a lot of grown-ups in their lives. And they got siblings. They're not growing up in a vacuum. It's all going to come down to your confidence and your decision about this. And they're going to perceive that. And also enforcing your rules. Schoolwork has to be completed, or no privileges at all begin. That is our house rule. I'm Dr. Ray.
Life can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling anxious, alone, or even in despair. That's why the nonprofit Revive app was created, to help you navigate the darkness and discover the light. With Revive, confidential conversations with a certified spiritual companion are always just a tap away. And right now, your first 2 sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V and then the number 3. Let them help you find joy in tomorrow.
Hello, I'm Marianne Kuharski with Pro-Life Across America. Did you know that a billboard can save a baby's life? When our billboards and radio ads are running, we receive hundreds of calls from those seeking pregnancy information and support. Every caller is connected to a local center offering free ultrasound and confidential counseling. Won't you join us in this life-saving effort? Donate today and help us do more. No gift is too small. That's prolifeacrossamerica.org.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing our pilgrimage to charming Ireland and its rich Catholic heritage. The shrines are nestled in the quaint Emerald Isle. Lovely people, marvelous food, sweeping vistas. Everyone's favorite is Mass at Our Lady of Knock and its Eucharistic apparition. We hope you can join us in August, along with our Irish chaplain, Father James Conlon.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
One last e-person question, relatively straightforward, relates to me when I was in college. I was 19 years old. I'll give you a little backdrop. I was 19, and at that time I was playing the organ in supper clubs, so that typically, on the weekends especially, you play till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, now, now I started at 9. Now I think I'd be half asleep by 9. But the question here is this. Should I give my 22 and 19-year-old sons a curfew? Now the question becomes, what time? Well, she gave me the time. 2 a.m. Whoa, I think that's pretty generous, even for 22 and 19. She says they both attend college out of town, but are home for the summer and for the holidays. Well, I've had a lot of parents tell me I can fall asleep when I hear that lock turn and my kids are in the house. And some parents will say, you know, my comfort here, my peace of mind is a consideration. Well, first of all, I think if you want my opinion, that's all you're asking for, because there isn't necessarily any specific ground rule for this. I think 2 a.m. is very generous, especially for 19. Wow. I remember one time I was at a party. I was summer between my freshman and sophomore year in college. I was at a party. And there was a really cute girl there, and we were talking, and we talked, and we talked, and we talked. And I got home at 4:30 in the morning. Well, Papa's already asleep. So I thought, okay, I'll go in the back door. I'll get in. I'll sneak in. And I'll fall asleep on the couch in the family room. Cool. Ah, worked once. Ought to try it again. I did. Yep, a couple weeks later, same girl, same late. Worked again. Third time was not the charm. I got caught. Dad gave me a 12 a.m. curfew. I remember arguing, Dad, I don't have a curfew when I'm at college. He goes, no, you don't. But you do here. 12 a.m. I was 19. I was a big boy. Had a curfew. So if you're asking me, Laura, should you? I'm going to ask you, is this your decision as a parent? See, when you say, should I give, you're basically saying there's some kind of ground rule out there where you can poll 100 psychologists and find out which one of them think it's legit. No, you're the mom. If you think that a curfew when you're here at home is how we run the family, that's your business. I'm not saying they're going to like it. Because if you're asking, will they like it, I'm going to say they won't. What kid would? Wanting to come in? But I think 2 a.m., you are being very flexible. And I would wonder if they argue with that, maybe you might want to reconsider making it earlier. Now, the 22-year-old might be a different ball game. Sounds like this 22-year-old's getting close to graduating from college. So you may say, I'm going to trust you not to abuse coming in. But if you did like Dr. Ray did, 3 weeks in a row, came in at 4 a.m., then that's abusing it. So yeah, maybe with the 22-year-old you can say, no curfew, but don't abuse it.
What's abusing it?
Consistently coming in after 1 o'clock. So that's one option for the 22. For the 19-year-old, he's his first year away from home, so he probably, as the song said, how are you going to keep him down on the farm after they've seen Paris? He's probably feeling he can fly when he's at school, because you can't know, and that's right. But when he's at home, you can say, oh, Mom, and I just breathe easier when I know my boys are safely in the house. Thank you for joining me here. Thank you, Andy Krucek, for all you do there at Ann Arbor. Tomorrow, good Lord permitting, talk to you ear to ear on The Doctor Is In. Walk with God. No curfew in walking with God. That's all the time.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The family that prays together stays together. This is the Guadalupe Radio Network, radio for your soul.
Do you know that San Antonio has a medical practice that was named under the patronage of St. John Paul II? Dr. Stephen and Amber Pilkington opened Dignity Women's Center for the purpose of providing authentic women's health care in the area of OBGYN and mental health. Dignity Women's Center offers total women's health care and professional counseling in line with church teaching. You can learn more about the various services from Dr. Stephen and Amber Pilkington at dignitywomenscenter.com.
I had never heard of Guadalupe Network Radio, and I cannot tell you how excited we are to learn about this fabulous radio station. I downloaded the app, and I've been listening since yesterday and today, and I'm just very excited. I'm just so thrilled that we have this wonderful tool in our toolbox to learn more about our Catholic faith. I just can't thank you all enough.
Is your spouse not quite the spouse you want him or her to be? Does it seem as though you will never get them trained? How many times do you have to complain to get something done? Why won't they listen? St. Ignatius of Loyola once said, "Let the Creator deal with the creature." Ask yourself, how many times have I given my spouse to God and let him deal with him or her? That's actually the best remedy for those irritating things that you so badly want changed in your spouse. Let the Creator deal with the creature. Lay those complaints on the altar and walk away. Don't go back and get them. Leave them there. You will be pleasantly surprised to see the changes, especially the changes in yourself. This has been a minute for your marriage and family from the Three Hearts Institute. Check us out on Facebook and Parler.
There was no single event. It was more gradual. You know, eventually you just don't go one Sunday, and then you don't go two Sundays in a row. Then went through a divorce and ended up being a single parent. If I didn't have church or God, I would be back at that lonely stage, that trouble stage. Whenever you get anxious and worry about things, you just know that Jesus has it under control.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Thanks for listening to KJMA 89.7 Floresville, San Antonio on the Guadalupe Radio Network in South Texas. Catholic radio for your soul.
Catholic radio for your soul.
Heard also streaming on grnonline.com and on your smartphone.